Members of the Jewish community, tonight we'll celebrate the start of Passover. But as you might imagine, during the COVID-19 pandemic, it's going to be a little different. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU. On the other end of our phone line this morning is Robert Dobrison. He is Rabbi Emeritus for the Congregation at Temple Beth Israel in Ann Arbor. And Rabbi, thank you so much for the time today, and a happy Passover to you.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here, and thank you very much for the greetings.
Just saying happy Passover feels a little different this year, doesn't it?
It certainly does. No one would have anticipated feeling this way as the holidays come, and I'm sure that goes for anybody who is celebrating religious holidays at this time of year. It just seems so different.
If I understand it correctly, you've already presided over a service this morning. How did you go about doing that exactly?
Well, we've been had services at Beth Israel Congregation now throughout the pandemic and the for people quarantining at home, et cetera, online. Our Rabbi Nadav Cain has constructed a great system along with the staff to put together a way for people to get together on Zoom and to be able to gather together for services. And we've been doing it on a daily evening service as well as for Sabbath services, and then this morning for a special service before Passover, and we'll be doing it throughout the holiday.
Are you finding that participation levels are pretty good?
Yeah, they are. You know, it's funny. Some people are really, really thriving with it, and especially since there's the sense of a lack of human contact, it's wonderful to be able to expand the people that you're able to see and talk with. You know, it's not the same. It's not the same feeling as being in the synagogue together. It's not the same feeling as being able to greet people with a handshake or a hug or whatever it might be. But, you know, to see people smile and to recognize, you know, that we're all going through this and we're going through it together, even if we're separate, has been a really good thing for the community.
I think it's very different to kind of receive from this end. A service. How different is it for you to lead a service in this way?
Well, again, I haven't been leading most of them. Rabbi Cain has, but I did lead this morning, and I taught this morning. And the leading of the service is somewhat the same, but when it comes to teaching or speaking, I was just saying after I got through with the teaching this morning, you know, I've done it, and I do it in other classes that I'm teaching, but it's not quite the same because you can't, you don't see people's, even if you're have everybody's you know, camera up on your screen, you're not seeing that you know, small gesture which says, can you repeat what you just said, or I have a question about what you just said, or something like that, or I have an idea to share, and people are reluctant to jump in. So it's not quite the conversation we like it to be. In terms of leading the service, you know, a lot of times people are on mute just so that we don't hear all the background noise and so that everybody isn't a beat off from each other, and that gets confusing. And then, so when there's a call and response during the service and you don't hear that response, it can be a little unnerving.
I can only imagine.
Again, we're getting used to it, you know, and hopefully we won't have to do it for too long, but as long as it's a matter of safety, we'll keep doing it.
As Rabbi Cain leads the congregation, how is he dealing with bar and bat mitzvahs, weddings, other temple traditions as well, when getting together isn't that possible?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about that. First of all, sadly, a lot of weddings have been postponed. And we know that that's not only taking place in our community, but in throughout the country, throughout the world. I was scheduled to officiate at a wedding in June, which has been postponed. You know, and so, and I know others have been, and it's very, very hard on the couples, obviously. And you have to scramble to work with people to have the date changed, and you have to make sure you're thinking about how far ahead you have to change it. So and that requires a lot of talking and a lot of support for people who are going through this. In terms of bar and bat mitzvahs, there's a huge issue because the young people who are studying for their bar bat mitzvah are learning a particular portion from the Torah or from the prophets, which are read on a particular Sabbath. And if they're not going to do it on that Sabbath, they're either going to have to learn another piece or do that section as an adjunct to the service, which I think that's being discussed with every family. We have had a couple of kids who have had at least participated in the service, and for some it's considered their bar mitzvah. You know, a Jewish young person becomes a bar or bat mitzvah when they turn 13, or in some traditions 12 for a girl. That they become a bar bat mitzvah without the ceremony. It means that they've attained the status of an adult in the eyes of the Jewish community in terms for ritual matters. And so but the ceremony is a big thing, and the participation of family and friends and gathering together for a celebration, and all of that is being postponed. And it's really uncanny to think about it, because we have faced situations before where it's been difficult to have a celebration. I mean, I remember specifically right after 9/11, we had a bar mitzvah, and, you know, the family, can we even celebrate? Well, you know, you find a way to celebrate. Everybody, whoever got in, and we had the service in the synagogue, but it wasn't the same. And we've had times where there have been power failures, and it hasn't been the same. But this is the first time I ever remember, and hopefully the last time, where, you know, it's been this different, where people just haven't been able to gather, and therefore have to postpone the celebration.
And different it is. You are listening to 89.1 WEMU, and we're talking with Temple Beth Israel Rabbi Emeritus Robert Dobrosin as Passover is set to begin tonight. Now, Rabbi, Passover commemorates the liberation of the Israelites from Egyptian slavery, and the reason it's called Passover is quite literal, right?
Well, the story of Passover, according to the book of Exodus, is that during the 10th plague, the killing of the firstborn of the Egyptians, God passed over the homes of the Israelites who had put the blood on their doorposts to symbolize their loyalty to God and to their people. There are some who claim that that's a bad translation, but it doesn't matter whether it's a good or a bad translation. That's the way it is, and that's what it refers to. The word, the name of the holiday in Hebrew, Pesach, it comes from that same word that God in the Hebrew, Pasach, God, and they assume that means passed over. Again, there are some people who have raised issues with that, but it doesn't matter. That's the way it is, and that's the way it's come down to us. So that's where the name comes from.
The Seder dinner uses food to help commemorate the liberation of Jews in symbolic ways. How was that tradition born?
Well, originally, if you go back to the Torah, the idea of the sacrifice that was made of a lamb and the blood put on the doorpost, and that lamb was considered to be a symbol for the future generations, and every generation, as long as Jews sacrificed animals, which we did until about the year 70, so it's almost 2,000 years ago. The sacrifice of the lamb and the eating of the lamb with matzah, unleavened bread, and bitter herbs, maror, as it's called in Hebrew, was the major part of the observance of the holiday. Later, without the sacrificial traditions, a lot of those got replaced by other things, and then others were added to it, like the what is called charoset, which is a mixture of usually fruit and nuts and there are all kinds of recipes for it, to symbolize the mortar that was used to do the building that the slaves did, but also as a sweet complement to the maror, to the bitter herbs, to balance out the bitterness with sweetness. And there are other symbols as well. And then you have also family traditions that have developed where, you know, in our family growing up, and my wife's family did the same thing, so we're continuing it. There was always the tradition of eating eggs and salt water at the beginning of the Seder meal. I don't know what the reason is, but that became the tradition, and it's a tradition for many people. And then many people have their own individual family traditions.
Yeah, I participated in a dinner in which parsley was dipped in salt water, mm-hmm. and the salt water to represent the tears of the Jewish slaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another one of the traditions, that the parsley, again, Passover was always, well, it's hard to say what its origin was, but the fact that it takes place at this time of year, it has an origin also as a spring holiday. And in fact, in the Torah, it's referred to as Chag Ha'aviv, the holiday of the spring time. And so the parsley is, people say, to indicate, you know, the greening of the world, a reawakening, so to speak, of the natural world. And, you know, to combine it with the salt water, again, was a reminder of the tears.
I would imagine tonight a great number of people will share a Seder dinner via Zoom and other electronic technologies, and others are going to go it alone with whomever they're sheltering in place with. It is different, and it can be a reminder that perhaps we all take for granted something as simple as freedom to celebrate with one another in person. Is that a part of what is being discussed in the Temple Beth Israel community?
Well, we are discussing it, and it's being discussed around the world. And I know, again, I have to say, it's not just Jews who are talking about this. I know that, you know, Easter is coming, Ramadan is coming, and people are really facing what it means to do things that are either of a communal nature or of an extended family and friends nature. You know, Passover, the meals of the Seder, one of the lines in the Haggadah, the book that we use for the ritual of the Seder, is, "Let all who are hungry come and eat with us." And it's always been a reminder that Passover is not just about our immediate families. It's about extended family. It's about friends. It's about people who need a place to be for the holidays. I was just talking to some people this morning about the fact that there have been many, many holidays, many Passovers, where we received a phone call from the synagogue or from someplace else saying, you know, somebody was unexpectedly in town for the holidays, or their plans for the Seder fell through at the last minute. Can they come to your house? And we add an extra chair or two to the table, and there's plenty of food. And that's always been the way it's been, not just for us, but for so many families. And we can't do that now. And the idea of a Seder over Zoom or whatever, a lot of people are doing it. I know Rabbi Cain has organized two such Seders for the synagogue community, and many people are doing it. And it really will make it less lonely and less isolated. But there are others who are saying, you know, I'll do it with my immediate family. It won't be the same, but we'll do it, because the ritual is to be, you know, our people have observed Passover over the centuries and millennia in very difficult situations. And leaving aside for one moment the very serious issue of the physical threat that the virus presents to us, the whole idea of sheltering in place, it's not as, for those of us who have a place to be, and I think we always have to keep that in mind, but for those who have a place to be, it's not the crisis that some of our ancestors have faced, where they didn't dare to do a Seder because of persecution or because there was a war or because they were threatened, whatever it might be. So it is much different, and it does not feel the same, but, you know, we're going to do what we can do, either over Zoom or whatever, or just with our families.
We're talking with Rabbi Emeritus of Ann Arbor's Temple Beth Israel, Robert Dobrosin. Whether it be isolation, fear and anxiety, financial distress, there is a lot about the pandemic that will impact well beyond the crisis. But for many, this point in time is especially difficult. What is your counsel to those who might be experiencing a crisis of faith?
Well, that's a very, very difficult question. My way of approaching this is that is at this time, you know, we might have theological issues. Some of us do, some of us don't, depending on what our theologies are or how much they occupy our minds and our thoughts. My answer is that the one thing we can do is to do everything we can to reach out to other people in the ways that we can. So, for example, you know, it isn't, you know, for those who have a safe place to be at home, to reach out to family and to recognize the blessing we have in those around us. To those who are alone, to take advantage of the things online, again, the Zoom Seders or whatever it might be, to reach out to other people to help. I mean, there is such a need right now. And I know people are concerned financially for a lot of reasons, but if we can, to help others celebrate their holidays or just be sustained on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, there is a theological crisis, but I think when you get right down to it, the way we respond to theological crises is to help each other. and to reach out to each other. It's very hard not to despair, but you know, the sun's out today, and we're inside looking at it. There's beauty in the world, and we just have to keep pushing on.
Thank you so much for sharing the time and the wisdom today, Rabbi. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you very much.
That is Rabbi Emeritus of Ann Arbor's Temple Beth Israel, Robert Dobrison. Passover begins at sunset tonight. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and HD1 Ypsilanti.